short-term extension to the payroll tax cut.
And how to pay for it.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Adrienne Hill, in for Steve Chiatakis. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Friday, December 23rd.
Coming up, we'll talk about the economics of the payroll tax cut.
And we'll find out why France is the gloomiest country in the world, at least when it comes to the economy.
Plus, the economic philosophy of Ron Paul.
Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
As we record this podcast, lawmakers have just passed a short-term extension to the payroll tax cut for 2 months. The deal will keep taxes for working folks from jumping in the new year and keep unemployment benefits coming for many people without jobs. Jill Schlesinger joins us now to talk about what the agreement means for consumers. She's an editor-at-large with CBS MoneyWatch. Good morning.
Good morning.
So can we count this as a win for consumers?
How about a short-term win, which I'll take? You know, Congress still needs to work on the other 10 months of the year. That said, that payroll tax cut amounts to an extra $1,000 in the average worker's pocket for 2012. You know, we just got a personal income and spending report that confirmed a year-long stagnant trend. So working Americans can really use this extra cash, and the economy could use the extra spending.
And what does it mean for the economy?
Well, you know, economists estimate that the extension of these two things, payroll tax cut and benefits to the long-term unemployed, should add 1% of growth in 2012. Now, don't be fooled by some of the better-than-expected data for the fourth quarter, like this morning's stronger-than-expected durable goods report. Economists say that U.S. growth is likely to remain slow next year, 2 to 2.5%. That means without these two short-term stimulus, these extensions, the economy could see growth of just about 1%, and that is not a level that is strong enough to lower unemployment or create new jobs. And I think that's why Congress actually came together and said, we got to pass this thing.
Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large with CBS MoneyWatch. Thanks so much.
Great to be with you. Happy holidays.
So what has Wall Street learned from this latest round of brinksmanship and all the other ones that came before? That's where we'll start now with Chris Lowe, who's chief economist with FTN Financial. He joins us from New York, as he does every Friday. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So as Wall Street economists like you have watched each of these Washington fights go down to the wire this year with big economic consequences, depending on the outcome, have you learned any lessons?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess let's put it this way. We're as frustrated as anybody with the politicking that's going on in Washington. But in this case, the outcome was so clear that we were able to focus on other things this time. It was pretty much taken for granted this one would pass.
The outcome was clear. How do you know? How did you know that?
Well, I think because both sides in this case were in favor of getting something done. The only question was the time that it would take. In contrast to that, the fight in 2012, which will be over the Bush tax cut extension, that could get ugly because, of course, one side thinks it will gain politically by getting rid of them. The other side thinks it gains politically by getting them extended. Who knows which way that one's going to go?
All right, Chris. Well, since this is our last chat with you in 2011, any predictions for 2012?
Yeah, I think maybe the most interesting one that's part of our forecast, we're looking at Europe, which is apparently in recession already. That's clear in the data. We're looking at an emerging market slowdown, which is also already evident in the data. And we're predicting that the U.S. economy is actually going to benefit from that. U.S. trade is going to slow down. There's no getting around that. But because we export so little, because U.S. manufacturing is so inward-focused, and because consumers benefit from slowdown elsewhere, because gas, food, and oil get cheaper,
right.
I think actually the U.S. economy is going to accelerate as Europe slows.
Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial, thanks as always.
Thank you.
The extension of the payroll tax cut bill isn't cheap, which got us wondering how lawmakers are going to pay the $33 billion price tag. Here's Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman.
The extension's paid for by increasing the fees that Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the Federal Housing Administration charge to private mortgage lenders, like banks. These fees are for guaranteeing mortgages for new home buyers, and that's who will ultimately foot the bill, which turns out to be not that big a deal, says Mark Zandi at Moody's Analytics.
It doesn't help, but it doesn't have a large impact because it only adds $10 to $12 to the average monthly payment for a typical borrower.
And right now, the typical new borrower is getting a record low interest rate, further softening the blow of higher mortgage fees. But, says Andy,
this is a precedent that needs to be considered very carefully, because if Congress is going to use Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to pay for things other than housing, they may try this again, and that could be a problem down the road.
Fannie and Freddie got bailed out after huge losses in the financial crisis, and their future role in the housing market is still uncertain. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Well, we're just a little more than a week away from the Iowa caucuses, and one GOP candidate who's been gaining steam in Iowa heading into the home stretch is Texas Congressman Ron Paul. As part of a series of conversations about the candidate's economic ideas, we're going to talk Paul-onomics now with Kevin Hassett. He's director of economic policy studies at the conservative think tank, the American Enterprise Institute. He's with us from Washington. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, just give us an overview of Ron Paul's economic philosophy.
Yeah, Ron Paul's economic philosophy is kind of a throwback philosophy. He wants to go back to the 19th century of how we ran the country. So he wants to repeal the 16th Amendment of the Constitution. He wants to have free trade and wants a really, really small government.
Well, how do you think that the economy would be different in this country if Ron Paul actually did the things that he wants to do? I can think of, for instance, he wants to get rid of the Federal Reserve, right?
Yeah, that's right. And that's one of the things that I have the most trouble with. Ron Paul is for going back on the gold standard, and that's a really cockamamie scheme. You know, there's no government left on earth that thinks that way about monetary policy. And I think that going back to the gold standard would make it so that if, you know, all of a sudden somebody finds some gold somewhere, then we've got inflation. Or, you know, if you're shipping some gold across the ocean and then the ship sinks, then, you know, it goes the other way. There are a lot of strange things that happen if you're on the gold standard.
There are going to be some people who hear this interview and maybe they're Ron Paul supporters, and they will say, oh, listen to this Kevin Hassett. He's just an establishment Washington guy at the American Enterprise Institute. He just doesn't want Ron Paul, this outsider, to come in and make real change.
I think that that's really false. The fact is that Ron Paul has some good ideas. I like the fact that he supports the fair tax, but he also proposes things that are really based on a misreading of modern economics, I think, and sometimes even a misreading of the Constitution. And so that's a strong reason to oppose, I think, the really strange set of policies that make up the Ron Paul platform.
Kevin Hassett is director of economic policy studies at the American Enterprise Institute. Kevin, thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Now to the global perspective. When it comes to worries about the economy, no country is more down in the dumps than France. A new Gallup International poll finds the French are as pessimistic about the economy as any country has been since 1978 when they started the survey. Joining us now from Paris is the BBC's Hugh Schofield. Good morning, Hugh.
Good morning.
So the new poll out today shows record pessimism in France. What do you make of that?
It doesn't entirely surprise me. The French are a sort of fairly gloomy lot as a general rule. And as, you know, the last 20 years have progressed, you know, their sense of optimism, which was very alive for the famous 30 years, the Trente Glorieuses, as they call it, after the Second World War, has gradually dissipated. And now, you know, that sense of despondency, that sense of gloom, what they call la morosité, moroseness, is just a sort of national characteristic at the moment. It's nothing new. So I'm not entirely surprised that they come out top of this poll, or bottom of this poll, we should say.
And what are they responding to?
I think they're responding to the dawning realization that their model, which, you know, they were so proud of, is just running out of steam. And that, you know, that is profoundly destabilizing for people in France.
We've got revised GDP numbers out from France today showing growth of about 0.3% in the third quarter. How important is that growth to getting out of the European debt crisis?
Clearly, the lower the growth level, the more likely it is that the ratings agencies are going to say, well, I'm sorry, we don't believe your figures for 2012. We're going to mark you down. I mean, we've already seen two austerity plans so that the government can, you know, claw back its budget figures and try to stick in the range that it gave itself. But, I mean, there's almost certainly more of this to come.
Hugh Schofield is the BBC correspondent in Paris. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The British oil company BP announced this week that it is getting out of the solar business after some 40 years. This is the same BP that has been marketing itself as beyond petroleum. So does this signal the end of that commitment? Well, not necessarily, as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports from our sustainability desk.
If you're shopping for a share of a solar power plant, BP is selling in Long Island and in Australia. It's exiting what's now a struggling sector, says Nathaniel Bullard at Bloomberg New Energy Finance. The field is crowded and the market is slowing.
Financial returns are pushed down. If you're selling product, you may be selling it at very low to zero margin.
But when the down cycle ends, he expects the sun to come out again. In many places, solar is cheap enough to replace coal or gas. As far as renewable energy in general, BP is staying in wind power and alternative fuels. Why?
Energy is energy. It requires a long time, a deep balance sheet. It requires a lot of expertise in dealing with regulatory bodies. This is what oil companies do.
And many companies have fingers in the renewables pie, including Chevron, Shell, and ExxonMobil. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Now to German car company Volkswagen and an email policy that many of us could only wish for. Emails outside working hours have been officially deemed verboten at the company. From the European desk in London, Stephen Beard reports.
The council that represents VW staff is worried. It believes that work-related emails are eating into workers' private lives. So the council struck a deal with the bosses. Employees using a company BlackBerry will no longer be bombarded with messages after hours. VW's email server will switch off half an hour after the end of the employee's shift and will only switch on again half an hour before the next working day begins. Professor Ferdinand Dudenhofer is an expert on the German car industry.
I think it's typical German because the Germans want to separate work and leisure time, so there should be no connection. Sometimes that really sounds strange, but it's German.
Arbeit ist Arbeit und Schnaps ist Schnaps is the German expression. Work is work and drink is drink. But that doesn't mean VW's German staff are lazy. Far from it. They've just produced an extra 50,000 vehicles as the company strives to overtake Toyota and General Motors in global sales. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Now to Rock Island, Illinois, which today, Adrian, is celebrating Festivus.
From Seinfeld Festivus?
Festivus from Seinfeld, the holiday, the secular holiday that was invented by Frank Costanza some 14 years ago.
The tradition of Festivus begins with the airing of grievances. I got a lot of problems with you people. Now you're going to hear about it.
Well, in Rock Island today, there will be an unadorned aluminum pole at the corner of 18th Street and 2nd Avenue. And according to the Quad City Times, a local restaurant will be serving the official meal of Festivus, meatloaf.
Mm.
New home sales are up slightly in November, but 2011's likely to go down as the very worst sales year on record. Sarah Gardner reports from Chino Hills, California, where one home builder is trying to innovate its way out of the housing doldrums.
Greg McGuff is in a good mood these days. In fact, he's downright giddy.
I've been in home building for 16 years, and everyone I know has even been in longer. We have never seen a product this exciting.
McGuff is a division president for Lennar Homes, one of the largest builders of new houses in the country. Lennar's testing out a new home design it calls NextGen. It's aimed at the nearly 20% of us now living with aging parents, boomerang kids, or other assorted friends and family.
We call it a home within a home.
Picture a modern two-story home, 3,300 square feet. 600 of that is a private suite with its own entrance, but set back a ways so it doesn't look like a duplex.
When you walk into the next-gen suite, you have your own living room, you have your own private bedroom, your own private bath, your own kitchenette area.
At a recent open house in Chino, 40 miles east of L.A., looky-loos and potential buyers like Mike and Karen Phillips get the tour. They've got a 24-year-old son still living under their roof.
It would be nice for him to actually have a kitchen area, a garage space, things like that, that he would feel more independent.
And spare Karen those 2 a.m. dinners he makes in her kitchen after a late night. Lennar hopes NextGen will spark some badly needed sales in a lackluster housing market, but the company's hedging its bets, rolling out just a few at a time in large master-planned communities in California, Nevada, and Arizona. And smartly, says consultant Patrick Duffy, only in cities with lots of immigrants.
Specifically Asian and Hispanic groups, where it's seen as a benefit to live with your family.
But Duffy suspects in this lousy economy, that idea may not remain a minority opinion. In Chino, California, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
With only one more shopping day until Christmas, today is set to be one of the busiest shopping days of the year. Adrian, have you done all your Christmas shopping?
I am done. I am all the way done.
I'm not quite done. I actually have one more thing to do, and I will
after
do it tomorrow.
After breakfast this morning?
Yes. I had to call the store and make sure that they were going to be open tomorrow so that I could do it tomorrow. Just in time. So
nice.
I'll be there. But if you feel that you're overspending while you're out frantically looking for gifts, that constant holiday music might be partly to blame. Research into consumer behavior suggests that people buy more when music is being played than when they're shopping in silence. From London, the BBC's Kate McGough reports in our Midday Extra.
It's not just the Christmas spirit. Shoppers spend longer in the store and buy more when music is playing. Around 17% more buying and browsing, according to experts in consumer behaviour. There are even certain rhythms, pitches, and styles of music that help get shoppers in the mood to spend. Grocery shoppers respond best to slower tempos, for example. But a word of warning to retailers, beware of too much of a good thing. Shel Horowitz is a marketing expert and the author of Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green. He says during the Christmas season, music marketing can backfire.
When you have some of these really in-your-face Christmas songs like Jingle Bell Rock that have nothing to do with the spirituality of Christmas, and they're just loud and in-your-face and reminder like, oh, Christmas is coming, you better shop, I think the consumer on some level is more sophisticated than that.
So hearing endless rounds of holiday tunes could trigger bad memories, leading to less satisfying times at the mall and fewer purchases. And spare a thought for the retail workers who have to listen to it all day. In London, I'm the BBC's Kate McGough for Marketplace.
And finally, Jeremy, there's technology out there already that identifies people by their fingerprints and the shape of their face and their eyes. You've probably seen this, right?
Yep, sure.
So a group of researchers have developed a car seat that recognizes, well, how people sit.
Oh, really?
If you know what I mean here. According to Wired, the new car seat analyzes 360 pressure points from your posterior when you sit down. And so if somebody other than the driver hops in the car, it's a no-go. But we don't know yet what happens if you gain a few extra pounds over
yeah,
the holidays.
Really. The car will immediately seize up, lock the doors.
and that's it.
That's it. That's the end of that. The alarm will start going off. Well, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year, Adrian. I know you're going to be here next week with Steve.
I will.
And I will be
we
off
will miss
next
you.
Week, and then I will be off the week after that, too. So I'll be back here on the podcast in 2 weeks. And from all of us at Marketplace, have a great holiday.
Happy holidays. In Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
This is APM, American Public Media.
It's a Festivus miracle!
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.